Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
It is easy, I thought, to find great affection for victims, emblems of vanished potential. There is nothing more heartbreaking than a squandered opportunity, a missed chance. I knew about stuff like that. I'd been young once. So many dreams had been dashed, but I dashed them myself. I wanted to be safe, whole, have a future of certainty. One makes mistakes when there is confusion between having a future at all and having the future one wants.
That's Otessa Moshfegh reading an excerpt from her latest novel, Death in Her Hands. The story follows the widow Vesta as she becomes more and more engrossed in a local murder mystery. Otessa proves once again that she is one of today's leading fiction writers, in large part because of her inimitable literary voice. She and her dog, Walter, who shares a name with a character in the book, joined us from her home in Pasadena to talk about the book and how it came about.
The process of me writing this book was different from any other book that I'd written. What I did was I sat down and said, I need to write a novel right now. Like, literally, that's just what I said to myself. I wrote the opening lines, which are the note. Her name was Magda. Nobody will ever know who killed her. It wasn't me. Here is her dead body. And then for the next however many months, I wrote 1,000 words a day with zero plan and made a deal with myself that I would never read what I had written on any previous day, and I would keep to this 1,000-word minimum until I had reached the end of a novel. And I had no idea what novel that was going to be, but it very quickly showed me that it was Vesta's novel, that it wasn't necessarily Magda's novel. So Vesta was the one who started talking in my mind. She was the one who was describing finding the note, this lovely to listen to voice that has been poetically transcribing the nature and, you know, the path that she walks on and the rhythm of her dog running beside her and all those kinds of things. And so she introduced herself to me in a way that made me want to keep going. But like with every novel, the person that you meet on page one is not revealing everything. You know, the point of reading is that we want to know what is going to be revealed. So that was how I wrote the book too, waiting for more to be revealed each day by this character.
Your book, Death in Her Hands, it becomes very metafictional when you're writing about Vesta creating profiles of Magda and suspects in her possible murder. At one point, Vesta questions the first sentence of your novel. Her name was Magda. What kind of opening was that? An editor would deem the note too dark to publish. Why did you want to get kind of metafictional like that?
Why did I want to? Well, because so much of this book is about writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
Vesta sets out to solve a murder the way that a novelist sets out to write a detective novel. And that's literally what she does. She goes and Googles how to solve a mystery and gets top tips for mystery writers.
Sure, but she uses Ask Jeeves.
Yeah, she uses Ask Jeeves. So she's really got the inside tip there.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, so to me it was, you know, it's a meditation on the imagination. You know, I mean, that's what mystery is. It's delving, or that's how you solve a mystery in your mind, is you go inward, you look for clues, you follow the breadcrumbs, and that's also kind of how we live life, you know, and it doesn't always come to a very clear ending as you know, a great Agatha Christie novel would, you know, or like in Clue, like it was... It was him in the courtyard with
Colonel Mustard in the courtyard,
yeah,
with
Colonel
the
Mustard
with the wrench or whatever. Yeah. So yeah. So the word, I was struck by how often the word mind space occurs in Death in Her Hands. And because the story is told in the first person, you're taking us inside Vesta's mind. But with this use of mind space and these metafictional moments that we've been talking about, you're kind of also taking us inside your own mind. Because as you mentioned, this is a book in which she's approaching trying to solve this possible murder as a writer would. So do you think that, was that something you were intentional about? Did it feel like while you were writing it, that's what you were doing, that giving the reader also a glimpse into the way you write?
I didn't feel that way, actually. Mm-hmm. I felt like I was very much inhabiting the mind of a different character than my own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's interesting because you're like, well, is it your mind or whose mind is that? And that's kind of the question that Vesta's asking too. Is that what is a mind? What space does it occupy? If you feel that someone has occupied your own mind space, is that real? You know, like, was I occupying her mind space by writing that book? You know, Vesta and I don't think in any certain terms, I could say, like, in a similar way.
Yeah, Death in Her Hands is similar to your previous novel, My Year of Rest and Relaxation, in the sense that both the protagonists are women who are isolating themselves from others, but they're doing it for different reasons. What is it about this loner type that you find so interesting to write about?
I think it's because that's the way that I had been my whole life. I had felt like a loner, even though I had had times of being very social, especially when I lived in New York. I felt, you know, really engaged in life outside of my apartment. For quite a while, I've always felt alone, and that is how I perceive things. It's through the filter of my own consciousness. You know, the same is true for McGlue as well. I mean, that's a character who's basically incarcerated for the entire novella. And it's true about a lot of my short stories. I mean, you know, partly I think maybe I've had until recently something like a resistance toward great action movement in a plot. And I've been more interested in interior vocalization of thought and storytelling in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Storytelling in performative way. Like, I write almost exclusively up until now, the thing I'm working on currently, I have written almost exclusively in the first person. So my narratives read like monologues sometimes. And that kind of oral writing really lends itself well to freedom, basically. You can go anywhere. You can jump back and forth through time. You can revisit a memory over and over again and remember it 1,000 different ways. You can give an opinion. You can talk about your opinion and disagree with yourself and then be somewhere else and someone is talking to you. It's just like, I love that form.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it because it allows for infinite interiority. You know, according to the parameters of each book has its own kind of rules. So I like to set the rules that I can go deep inside as well as, you know, outside. So
yeah,
that's what I like to do.
And I think it's what we like to read, too. That's part of what makes your work so compelling. Vesta comes across to me as an unreliable narrator. Does this mean that there are multiple ways to interpret the events that occur in the course of the book, especially the ending?
Oh, I think there are always multiple ways to interpret anything, because that's the whole thing about language. It's just words. And words require interpretation. But yeah, I think that the end of Vesta's story has a sense of, I want to say dissolution, but I actually think the more precise word is dissolvency or something, where we feel her grip on tactile reality somehow dissolve into the water of her fictional mind space. I know that sounds so weird, but yeah, it's just this kind of thing that happens in the writing. And I think, you know, if you're a very, very, very literal reader, you might, you know, stumble on that. Like, that might catch you or trip you up, and then you might get a little confused and try to figure out, like, well, what's really going on here? But if you're a more poetical reader or willing to take that on, I think there's potential for a kind of, I don't want to call it ecstatic, but because that's too positive, that's too subjective. But there is some kind of, maybe just metaphysicality that's going on in the evocation of these last couple of pages for Vesta, where we think maybe she is ascending outside of her body into her mind space. Like, maybe this is her death. And if it is, it's kind of beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, the writer Gia Tolentino has said that you're, quote, easily the most interesting contemporary American writer on the subject of being alive when being alive feels terrible, end quote. We're in the midst of this coronavirus epidemic. Does being alive now feel even more terrible than usual to you?
No. I mean, I also don't necessarily agree with that statement.
No?
No, I don't think that summarizes what I do.
Okay, can you correct that? Like, can you give us a summary of what you would do that would be more accurate coming straight from you?
Well, I don't think that I'm only writing about feeling terrible.
No, I agree.
I think I'm writing about many, many things. And I think that feeling terrible, as I dramatize it or novelize it in my projects, is something that people are drawn to because it's interesting to watch a person suffer, and it makes for, you know, good drama. But I do think that's I've heard that quotation before, although I understand that it is enormously flattering, I don't want to be remembered just for that. And so I don't mean this in a way at all to dismiss your question, Doug. Like, I appreciate your asking it and bringing it up, because it is a really important time and a lot of people are feeling very terrible, and it is completely beyond me how to address anything that is happening with clarity and focus without being very heartbroken.
Is there a ritual, perhaps a daily ritual that you have that's helping you to maintain your sanity these days?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually living quite like Vesta. Like, I make a list of things to do in the morning, and definitely includes taking a walk with my dog. Almost every night at 6 o'clock, I have a Zoom meeting with my sister, my husband, and a very close friend to process through different topics or things that have come up. And it's a nice space to have. And it is, like, intimate and a place for me to challenge myself. And it's definitely not like therapy or a support group per se. It's like a reality group, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I do that, and I've been eating a lot of popcorn.
That's good. Otessa Moshfegh, thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug. It's great to talk to you again.
Otessa Moshfegh is the author of Death in Her Hands. It will be available June 23rd. It's her third novel. Find out more about Otessa at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Chuck Wendig, Eric Andre, Patrick McGilligan, and Otessa Moshfegh. If you want to hear it again or binge on past episodes, subscribe to the Beta podcast via Apple Podcasts or wherever you catch your favorite pods. And make sure to let us know what you think by leaving a rating or a comment. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta. Or on Twitter, at WPRBeta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic!
Special thanks to producer Brad Kohlberg.
Oh, you must have been the tallest one in your class.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Love is the only thing that can save this poor creature.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Do you also say Friedrich?
And thanks to you, our elves. please be safe out there. We'll see you next week. I'm Doug Gordon.
You've got it, mister.